Is it time for a mind shift? If you don't know what that means, then join your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, a former evangelical Christian pastor and Bible college teacher of over 20 years, along the journey of deconstruction and reconstruction of faith, life, religion, and spirituality.
I'm really happy to be talking today with Ren Storer. We've been talking back and forth, I don't know how long, it's been months to try to get this together, but we finally made it. So welcome, Ren, to Mindshift Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we had a little bit of a glitch, I think, last month. I might have think it was sick or something, but I've had this COVID thing go on a couple times. I just finished being sick all this last week, so I'm finally up and running again. But have you had it? Have you been battling any of that stuff over there?
Oh, yeah, we've had it. Actually, I'm just starting to recover from it, although it wasn't necessarily COVID or RSV. I don't know what it was, but.
Yeah, there's a lot of strains going around, isn't there? Yeah, that's what I think I have. Yep. There's weird strains of it, but it's not good, is it? Well, now we have a lot in common because I've been reading your posts on Facebook for a long time and I've shared a lot of them. And I think, okay, every time I read another one of your posts, I think, man, I need to talk to Ren because obviously we've got a kind of a backstory. I'm sure you must have grown up in Christianity, though. Maybe we could kind of start at the beginning. Where does it all begin with you? Did you grow up in church? Were you in church from day one?
I did. Actually, I have a pretty unique story that my babysitters from church adopted me.
Wow.
So, yeah. So my parents were young, struggling family, and people came to their aid to help them out, and it didn't work, and ended up being adopted within the church.
Right.
So I consider myself like a church baby.
Yeah, literally. So where was this? What time frame and what sort of part of the country are we talking about?
I grew up in Connecticut.
Right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting story. So this couple adopts you. But then obviously, did they raise you within that same church? So you still knew your
biological father? Yep. I was still there. And my biological father stuck around. So I saw him every Sunday and Wednesday night. And he would stop by actually at my Christian school for surprise visits sometimes. And it was pretty wild. Yeah.
How did they explain that to you? Were you accepting of the fact that, you know, well, this is my dad and mom, but they can't raise me?
They didn't have to explain anything because I already knew. I have a lot of memories from as a baby, as a toddler. I was adopted when I was 3, and I remember all of it. So they didn't really have to explain anything to me.
Right. Are your biological parents still involved in your life, even now?
My biological father passed away when was it? Like 7 years ago. Hmm. And my biological mom is still alive, but I don't have a whole lot of a good relationship with her.
Right. That's something you and I have in common for different reasons, though, but I had to cut my relationship off with my mom probably 7 or 8 years ago because she was so toxic. She's still very much a fundamentalist Christian. There's a whole backstory there, but yeah, that's a tough thing, isn't it, when you don't have a relationship with your own biological mother?
Yeah, in some ways, I feel like the church raised me. You know, my adoptive parents were there to make sure that I was at every service and involved in everything, and they helped, you know, obviously, but really myself and a lot of the core members of the church, you know, us kids, we were raised by the church because we were there so often and so immersed in it.
Would you say that, I mean, we've talked a lot about this in other contexts, you know, that there's a lot of similarities between evangelicalism and the world of the cults. And that's one of the kind of markers that sticks out to me is that you're in this bubble and you're there so much of the time, physically present on the church campus, in the building, whatever it might be, doing their ministries, to activities, that you don't ever have time to really build relationships with people on the outside. Is that kind of what you're describing in some ways?
Oh, absolutely. We say that it's like we're raised on a commune right in plain sight. because we were so immersed in the church life and really strongly, aggressively kept away from outside of the church. So like the only, my secular education that I had was driver's ed, and I hated it because I was so uncomfortable with people who weren't religious. So
these people aren't Christians.
Yeah.
That goes against everything that Christianity is supposed to stand for. What about the Great Commission, Great Commandment? You're supposed to be out there evangelizing.
They love to do that part, but no, like it can't, you can't let those relationships affect you, kind of thing.
Right. So where did you proselytize? Did the church go out and preach on the street corners, hand out tract? What did they do?
Oh, absolutely. Every Wednesday after school, before youth group, we would go out door to door, like just like Jehovah's Witness or whatever. So, yeah, that's how I grew up, going door to door, and they encourage you on your own time as well. Like I was having my own personal devotionals at our friend's girl sleepover, who it was all church kids. You know, and I was still like giving gospel presentations. I must have been like 10 years old. So crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like we couldn't just be kids, you know?
Exactly. That's something you look back on as an adult. If you walked away from that, I think too that it affects every aspect, every area of our lives, you know, sexuality, relationships, interpersonal relationships, marriages, families, everything. Everything, there's everything. Nothing that religion hasn't touched on some level, hasn't it? You can't just have a normal friendship, normal relationship with another kid. You've got to always be thinking, oh, is he or she a Christian? How am I going to witness to them about the gospel? You know, you can't be normal.
Yeah. I mean, in one aspect of what Christianity's gospel has effectively done is really create an identity crisis for people. It cuts to the heart of who you are and how you feel about yourself. And they say that you on your own are bad and, you know, put on Christ's righteousness and you'll be okay. You know, it's like they create the problem and then they offer the solution. But all of their propaganda has been about an identity, your identity in Christ. And so when people start having questions or doubts or going through really hard times, then Christianity just doesn't hold water to the reality that people go through. So they're naturally going to have a strong emotional reaction when those hard times hit. Mm-hmm. You know, really to have any doubts or questions, it attacks people's identity. And you're really setting people up for failure.
It's true. I've done a lot of research on that, the whole thing of doubling, because I realized those of us that were raised in church, sort of like second, third generation, we never had an authentic self. We only ever knew our religious self. And I've realized now that I've walked away from the faith, you know, 15 years ago or something like that, the self I'm discovering or rediscovering who actually am I, you know, whereas the person who might have come to faith later in their life, they had a previous sort of identity that they built up before they became a Christian, and then they've got to go back and sort of reconnect with that one. But do you feel like you never had an authentic self other than that religious one?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there were several layers of it for me. Absolutely just the whole identity thing. And yeah, they strip you of that. They tell you that you're bad and strictly to not trust yourself. I mean, they actively, aggressively pursue that concept. But also, I mean, for me, I had adoption trauma confounded on that. And just being a woman, being a girl raised in that, where we were told that your purpose of existence is to serve men. So, I mean, yeah, we were never allowed to have our own identity, you know? There's several layers to have to work through that.
Yeah. So it's a very patriarchal system. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're raised in a very controlling cult-ish environment, would you say? What about the leader of this church? Because does that person, whoever, I'm sure he, would he sort of fit that profile of the classic cult leader?
Yes. Well, you know, there's several of them. They all work together to uphold the leadership. There is a lot of, in my sect, there is a lot of teachings on authority and obedience and all of that to uphold the pastor. Like, I don't know, you remember the Bible story about the kids making fun of, I don't know, was it Elijah or like one of the prophets called them bald and then a bear comes out and mauls them?
Yeah,
we were told that story. Yep, to make sure that we kids weren't, you know, questioning authority or whatever. And like, come on, that's just complete obvious horrible propaganda right there. Mm-hmm. Like just fear and intimidation. Like, I look back as an adult and I'm like, why would you purposefully do that to kids? That's terrible. But
recipe for religious trauma syndrome. And the story, if you look at the narrative, it's God who's obviously commanded the bears to, you know, maul these 42 kids. So you think, okay, the gods that's behind that, according to the narrative, is apparently fine with that because these kids were so bratty that they dared to laugh at a holy man of God. And now it's an object lesson for you. I mean, what about religious trauma syndrome? That's a whole nother layer to this thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and not a whole lot of therapists are trained in that. Like, thankfully, it's becoming more accepted and have more awareness, but like, just a general therapist wouldn't really be understanding of that, I think. But yeah, as far as like the pastoral worship, I mean, you remember, I actually went to two Bible colleges. One, I had to leave after a year because the pastoral worship was so strong. It definitely gave off creepy vibes. Like, he came in like he was a rock star and, you know, everyone's clapping and cheering. And it just confused me, especially being like neurodivergent. I was so confused. Like, we're all humans. And what makes there some kind of grand hierarchy among us? You know, what makes him have more access to God than me? Because that doesn't make sense. If Jesus died for all of us, then we equally all have access. It just didn't make sense. And I mean, they teach us not to worship a man, only worship Jesus Christ. And yet they do all of these things that uphold worship of leadership. And it just didn't make any sense to me. It didn't sit right. And, you know, then there's the whole, you know, a lot of sex abuse going on within leadership that thankfully is becoming a little bit more exposed now. But that's, I mean, my childhood pastor also got caught in a scandal, and, you know, my church wasn't immune to that either. And it's just all really sad. And I mean, that's what, I mean, one of the Bible verses is, you know, pride comes before a fall, you know.
But it doesn't happen for some of these people. And that's the thing, isn't it? That I think it's been proven, hasn't it? Like you said, a patriarchal leadership structure is rife for abuses because, A, the pastor is going to be a celebrity, revered and put up on a pedestal, blah, blah, blah. And then he feels the freedom to be able to abuse women or young girls in his congregation, knowing that 9 times out of 10, they'll be blamed for it, for leading the man astray, in air quotes, you know, dressing provocatively, whatever it might have been in that evangelical modesty, purity culture context. And then she'll be blamed for it, or her parents will probably be blamed as well. And then he'll be free to continue to abuse. So that we've seen that pattern, God knows how many times.
It's really a genius system for them.
It is. It's great for abusers, you know, and there's the laundry list. I mean, we have this story right now with what's going on in the IHOP, KC, Mike Bickle, and the pattern is repeating itself again. They're denying it. He's denying it. The church is helping to cover it up, blah, blah, blah. I mean, same old story.
It is. And, you know, with all this fear mongering that they gave us about the outside world and, oh, I don't know how non-Christians can survive without Jesus.
Yeah.
That I was actually so excited to get out into the world. And I'm like, you know, I felt like Rapunzel, you know, just getting out, stepping outside for the first time and, you know, having such high hopes and dreams and thinking, oh, wow, you know, this whole entire world literally was kept from me. And I was told that it was bad, but it's actually pretty good. And then getting out and having some experiences, and I'm like, oh, wait a second. A lot of the patterns are still the same out here as it was inside. And there's actually not much difference. Hmm. And that was hard to swallow because,
yeah,
I mean, especially as a woman and, you know, feeling like just being in that patriarchal system was so oppressive. And I'm like, oh, I have rights as a woman. And, you know, this is great. I don't have to be subjected to this. But then still running into female rights issues, women's rights issues outside of that strict patriarchal confines. So, yeah, it's still... This is why I've created the magazine Simply Be,
mm-hmm.
to combat all of that, because what I've learned in deconstructing and talking to people and hearing their stories is I'm seeing the patterns, right? It's just our humanity trying to work through all of the conditioning, whether you had religious background or not, and trying to find our true authentic self. And trying to deal with that within the economy that isn't set up for the average person. So that's why I created the magazine, to kind of put that on display, to share people's stories and for people to see the patterns themselves in a way that's not, it doesn't really have an agenda other than celebrating humanity, celebrating each individual, because a huge way to protect yourself from the dangers of a cult or, you know, anything that seeks to dehumanize us is the opposite, to humanize us again, mm-hmm. you know, and to celebrate our individuality and also within the collective, within each other and the whole. That we do have value and we do have purpose with each other. And so that's what my magazine really seeks to showcase, is our humanity again.
Mm-hmm. And it's ironic. I mean, those sort of buzzwords you use, and they were everything we were promised in church, weren't they? You talk about being valued and finding a sense of community and being empowered and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I can remember
preaching that
pastor. Yeah, that's the difference, isn't it?
Yeah. You don't have that on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's all through Jesus. And that's so easy to create a divide between people. So then now you start. I remember, man, I was writing a little short story back in the day and had like this like visual that went with it of like faceless people, and then just like a few out of an entire crowd were like kind of the chosen ones kind of thing. And because that's what Christianity sells you, is that everyone else is dead inside, but there's only a few that are in Christ that are truly alive. And it really sets you up against everyone else, and it's dehumanizing so much that, like, when I thought of that, it's like faceless people, you know? And so, yeah, I think a way to combat that is to really just celebrate our individuality and our humanity.
So ironic that we have to find it outside of religion. That's one thing I've found interesting. I had an interview with Rachel Bernstein from the Indoctrination podcast not long ago. Something she said that really struck me. She said that the problem with religion is that it's an external locus of control. It's something outside of ourselves. Like you've been saying, we have to transfer our autonomy, our agency to someone, other deity or leader or figure outside of ourselves. And therefore we lose that autonomy. We lose that agency. And that can be hugely crippling, can it?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, autonomy is the basis for all other well-being. If you lose your autonomy, then you don't have anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need that sense of agency. And that's something that, you know, people like us, we discover that after, like, say, after we leave religion, which is so weird. I keep coming back to that point that that's everything that religion promised us. You know, they said we were going to get all this wonderful stuff, but then does it actually deliver in the end? I tried it for my whole adult life. I was a pastor, you know, Bible college teacher. I taught it. I preached it. I got baptized 3 times to try to get it right. And still at the end of it all, it was tried and found wanting. So where was God in all that? You know, because that's, to me, that's the ultimate question. Where's the God behind all this? Isn't he supposed to be making sure that people like you and I don't fall away?
Right. There's just so many holes.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
a big one.
Many holes. Yeah. I mean, you go into sovereignty versus free will and all of that, that's a whole nother topic that you can go on forever about.
Yeah, that's a rabbit hole. When we come back from the break, in the second half of this conversation with Ren's story, we're going to get into the question of how she ended up getting out, as well as delving into the topic of how to discover, how to recover, perhaps, your authentic self. Maybe you never had one. Maybe like myself and Ren, you were raised in a cult, raised in a religious context, and the only one you ever had was the religious self. Who is the real you? We're going to talk about that as well as some other topics in part two. But before we get back with Ren, I wanted to give you a quick update. What's coming up here on the show? We've had some fantastic conversations. I've got so many calls recorded. I'm struggling to get to them all. I just had a chat the other day with my very good friend, Frank Schaefer, and that is a really kind of an important topic. We got into some stuff about Trump, Trumpism, the evangelical MAGA stuff that's going on. So I think I'm going to bump Frank to the head of the queue, but I still have Jonathan Davis. I've got Sarah McCammon. I've got another one that I did with Marissa Hackett, who survived a far-right cult. Then I chatted with my good friend, Dean Krosatz, who's been on the show before. So I've got, I don't know how many episodes I've got recorded. I've got a couple more recordings booked. So in the next couple of months, we'll get to all these episodes, but we're going to have Frank Schaefer coming up next, as well as Jonathan Davis and some of these other ones coming up. Keep in mind too, that this Sunday, as this episode drops, the 24th of March, we are going to have our Mind Shift Zoom call, and that is with recent guest Sarah Hayward. I'm looking forward to that. She's going to talk about her book, Giving Up God and Resurrecting Some Sort of Spirituality. Maybe that describes you. Maybe you've walked away from the faith, but you still have an open mind toward this idea of spirituality. So if that's the case, you want to get in on this call with Sarah Hayward. And to do that, you need to become a Patreon supporter of the show. These are closed calls that we do once a month, usually about the third Sunday of the month. We had Joshua Stewart on last month. That was a great call. And like I say, we're going to have Sarah coming on this Sunday, the 24th of March. So if you want to be a Patreon supporter of the show, get access to those closed MindShift Zoom calls, as well as our closed Facebook group. So if you want to find out more about being a patron of the show, it's much appreciated. The links, as always, are in the show notes. One last little piece of news before we get back with Ren, and that is I am nearing finally completion on the final edits of my book. I've been working with Tim Sledge, and so we're getting close. I keep saying that, but I'm getting very close to being finished with it. So hopefully it'll be out within the next few months. I just didn't want to get it out too soon before it was absolutely 100% ready, and I was absolutely happy with it, and I'm getting very close now. So I will be reading probably the introductory chapter from the book as a podcast episode, so you'll get a little bit of a sneak preview as to what the book is about. So stay tuned for that coming up very soon. All right, let's get on back into the second half of the conversation with Ren's story, looking into this issue of how to recover your authentic self after leaving religion. How did you end up getting out in the end? Because that you talked about you got out in a sense, you escaped. At what point did you finally go, you know what, I've had enough? Or was it a long sort of slow burn?
Mine was pretty unique. It was kind of accidental. I was in it because I wanted to be pure and I wanted to be all in. I think a lot of my adoption trauma played into that. wanting to be the good kid and not wanting to be cast out. Then when I became a mother, that really fueled me. I was terrified of the tribulation, mm-hmm. of the rapture. And I was deathly afraid. It was like almost as soon as my first baby was born, I became very fearful about that. Because I'm like, especially with my adoption trauma, I'm like, what if God takes me and leaves my kid? Like, I can't even imagine that. And so I actually, my first Bible study was about the tribulation. I started reading Revelation. Then I started having questions like, who is Jesus? I realized I was a Bible college graduate and I've been immersed in Bible my whole life. But really all I knew about Jesus was that he died for our sins and did some miracles. And everything else is like studying Paul and the Old Testament. And there wasn't a whole lot on actual Jesus. And even referring to Jesus, that about got me black sheep listed already just from saying the name Jesus. Wow. It was wild. And I couldn't believe it. That was a huge red flag right there. But because everything else was like God, the Father, the Holy Spirit, but Jesus was never mentioned. And so I started seeing that lens, like, I want to know who Jesus is. And I want to so I started developing a personal relationship with Jesus as we were taught. Mm. And that I was like, within my first started speaking up already, I was threatened with church discipline and had to leave the church. It was like, that was at the very beginning. Yeah. I couldn't believe it.
Crazy.
And yeah. And so I just kind of went on my own for many years to develop this personal relationship with Jesus because I couldn't find him in the church. And that became a really wild and a very strange, almost creepy part of my life. But I think what was happening was I was seeking my true authentic self through that, because I think I created this character of, you know, all that was good. And this character that really knew me and had me reflect back on myself. And I learned how to do a lot of reflection and self-awareness then. Mm-hmm. And I think I established a lot of the foundation, the strong foundation that I have now back then. It was just really mixed up with a lot of the toxic Christian theology that I was fed. And what happened was I really believed in hell so much. I was terrified to see people because I would just imagine them just get caught up in flames. Yeah. It was really making me crazy. And I felt like I got to a point where I couldn't get any better in my spiritual life. Like there's no way that I could believe any harder, you know? And what I noticed as the more I went in, the further away I got from people. The more I had a hard time relating to people or them relating to me. My relationships with people just tanked. And I couldn't understand why, because I was following Jesus. Mm-hmm. And yet Jesus had a good relationship with everyone. And Jesus wanted us to immerse ourselves in people. And I was like, what is happening? And I didn't understand. And I had a best friend who we were deconstructing a lot together. And she called me up one day and was like, friend, I got to talk to you about something. But, you know, don't say no right off the bat. And I was like, I trust you. What's going on? And she said, I don't think me and my husband believe in hell anymore. And I thought like, oh, my goodness, about, you know, almost fell over. And I said, okay, well, I trust you. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. We might have to end up agreeing to disagree, but I'll check into it. And I read Rob Bell's book, and then I read Francis Chan's book in rebuttal to it. And at the end, I was like, I still think Francis Chan was right, that there is a hell. And I was like, I can't believe I read Rob Bell's book and then read Francis Chan and still chose Francis Chan. And I just didn't know any other way to look at it. I I couldn't fathom any other perspective because I was in it for so long. And then it's just so wild. Like, I feel like that's where my logic got me, only up to that point. And like I said, my biological father passed away 7 years ago, and I was very pregnant. He had passed away in November, and by February, I was ready to give birth with my fifth baby. And that night before I had to get up to go to the hospital, he appeared to me in my dream. I had a dream about him. And now, coming from the Christian sect that we did, that was not possible. That was demonic, all of that kind of stuff. That was really out there. But it didn't feel like a regular dream. It felt like he actually found a glitch in the system to visit me, to tell me something.
Right. A glitch in the matrix.
Knowing my father, yes. And knowing my father, who loved to surprise visit me.
That sounds like it.
Made sense. Yeah, totally. It totally fit with his personality. And he was an extremist like I was. Mm-hmm. And so after he died, I could totally see him, like, you know, just being in awe of having all this knowledge of experiencing something else other than fundamentalism. And he knew that I would care about it. And so he's like, I got to tell Ren, you know? So he was like, I have something to tell you. And I was so shocked that I was experiencing this in this dreamlike state. I couldn't really understand what he was saying. I couldn't, like, I was just way too shell-shocked. But I remember at the end, and then I remember at the end, he said, I'm so proud of you. I know that you're going to have a baby, and I'm so proud of you. I woke up, and I was like, I don't know what that was about, but it was a good experience, so I'll just leave it at that. But a few months later, which I don't know if you're aware of frequencies and the resonance effect.
Yeah, I'm a little bit familiar with it. Yeah.
So like, you cause an initial change, and then that change takes some time in order to be actualized. So I feel like that's kind of what happened, where a few months later, all of a sudden, what he said kind of came back and hit me. And that is really when I walked away from Christianity, and I kind of could finally see another perspective other than fundamentalism. Again, I do not claim any kind of meaning behind that dream at all. I just think it allowed me to see another perspective. So I feel like that's truly when I left, and what caused me to really deconstruct.
Dreams can be powerful things, can't they? I can't explain them either, but I have really bizarre dreams. And I'll tell my girlfriend, you know, I woke up the next morning, I say, you're not going to believe this dream that I had last night. And we'll kind of talk it through. And it's a lot of stuff that you're working through at the moment. It seems like, you know, it's in your psyche somewhere, isn't it? And clearly your brain is, even though you're asleep, your mind is on some level, it's still processing this stuff. And the dream, vision, whatever you want to call it, is somehow part of us working that stuff out, you know, and it obviously had a big impact on your life, didn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So it's interesting for me, and like trying to talk to people, I think logic can, you know, obviously we need logic, we need reasoning, we need self-awareness, reflection, and all of that. And it all helps. But some people, I don't think can get it, or have the ability to go that far without some kind of something happening within. I don't know, need some help, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's funny, because I wanted to go back to something you said. You were talking about, in a way, the closer, in air quotes, the closer you got to Jesus, the less you could relate to other Christians. I remember meeting a friend of mine years ago when I was in the States visiting. And I asked him, you know, where are you at with the whole Christian thing? Because we grew up in Christian school in the Seattle, Washington area and all that. And he said, you know, I'm done with all that. But he said, sometimes I'll go back to church and I'll get to chat with these people in the pews, you know, and they'll say, well, what are you doing here? He said, well, you know, are you a follower of Jesus? And they'll say, oh, yes, absolutely. And he says, well, can you name me three concrete, specific things that you do in your life that specifically are because of your, you know, you're following Jesus's example? Give me three. And they can't even give him one, you know? Like you said, most of the church is built on Paul's theology and everything else. We don't, you know, in Christianity, there's no really following Jesus. In fact, there's another funny story you probably heard about. I think it was Russell Moore, the guy that used to be with the Southern Baptist Convention. Remember that thing where he said, it was a couple months back, and he said something like, pastors are now, if they say something that Jesus said from the pulpit, their parishioners will come to him and say, hey, where'd you get that liberal nonsense? You know, and he's like,
I've seen it online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's in the gospel.
Yeah.
And they're like, what the hell? You can't be preaching that liberal nonsense, you know, that snowflake garbage.
Yes.
It's the words of Christ.
You know? Yes, I've seen a lot of that. It's wild.
Yeah. That's yeah, the state of the evangelical church, mostly in America today. Certainly the whole Republican Trump MAGA thing, you know. Weakling Jesus around.
Yes, I think that has strongly influenced that aspect for sure.
Yeah.
I remember even just reading the Sermon on the Mount was just like really eye-opening. It's so crazy. Like to think of, like to say nothing good. You are nothing good on your own. It's all Jesus's righteousness. And then on the same token to completely dismiss and disregard and even degrade Jesus and his words. It's unfathomable.
And yet they'll embrace Jesus as this sort of returning warrior king. That's the Jesus they want to see, you know, because I can remember there's a famous quote from Mark Driscoll when he was in his heyday at Mars Hill in Seattle. You probably heard this quote somewhere, and he said something to the effect that, you know, I don't want to worship a Jesus that's a sissy that I could beat up, you know, I want that revelation Jesus that's coming back on a white horse with a sword and a tattoo on his thigh. And that's the Jesus I want, you know, the conquering dominion, you know, theology kind of figure that these Christians are wanting. That's why they're supporting guys like Trump and everything else, isn't it? That's right. The Jesus. They don't want this weak warrior or this weak wimpy Jesus. They want the tough masculine Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, it's all built on hatred for other people, you know, to beat people into submission.
Yeah. And that's what we're seeing. So where would you describe, how would you describe yourselves today? Because you said you walked away from the faith. Where's your sort of spiritual journey leading you now? Because you've got a lot of stuff coming out. You've got a book coming out. You've got a magazine. What's your sort of status now?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I just really like to celebrate humanity and life and having balanced perspective, nuance. And I'm an atheist to the fundamentalist God. I think I would like to hope that there's something more, something bigger. To that, I just don't think it's possible to know. So in that regards, I'm more agnostic. But I've actually delved a lot into spirituality outside of religion when I walked away. A lot of like supernatural stuff and visions and even just, I don't know, just spirit realm kind of stuff.
Just exploring.
And yeah. And I don't know. I'm just kind of more agnostic to everything. Mm-hmm. And I see the value in most everything, but I also see pitfalls and red flags in about almost everything. And I think it's just, you just got to be careful and, you know, take everything with a grain of salt kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I resonate more with what you're saying. I feel more like I'm an agnostic. I don't believe in the God of the Bible, but that doesn't mean that there's not something out there. I don't know. I have a lot of questions, but why tie yourself down to one position? There's, you know, we're on this journey, aren't we? There's a road of discovery ahead. We don't know what's going to come around the corner. You never know, do you? Now, what's your book about? When you talked about that, you've got a book. Is it out yet or is it coming out?
No, it'll come out towards the end of the year. Well, it'll fall with the same kind of pattern as my magazine. They kind of go together. So in the magazine, I take different areas of life and get different people's stories within it and kind of undoing the conditioning, social conditioning, and coming back to celebrate authentic, their authentic self. And so in Simply Being Ren, which is my book, I'll do that, but an expanded version. So I'll go through every area of life and kind of give a narrative, a story based on, you know, the different areas of life, because I think there's so much that makes us who we are that even just telling one version of us isn't enough.
Yeah, we need that multiple perspectives, only different points of view. There's a lot to us that we don't know. Even like we were saying, rediscovering that authentic identity, I'm still learning stuff about myself every day. And that's all related to experiences that I had, you know, writing my book. I've gone through and I've rewritten and rewritten and added more and added more. And then when I read through it again, I think, oh my God, I just remembered a whole bunch of stuff that I thought I forgot. You know, I've got to go back and add that in, because that's part of the story and it's part of who I am today and who I'm becoming today. So we can't, it's inseparable, isn't it? Our experiences, our backstory, it is still part of who we are. We can never escape that, can we?
Yeah. I mean, we're such complex creatures, and I get like the complexity can be really scary for a lot of people. And it's, there's such a temptation to use like religious word to simplify things and to keep things black and white, but that's very difficult in a very complex and nuanced world. And I think that's when you can run into a lot of problems, like being subject to propaganda and stuff. But at the end of the day, even with all the complexity, things are still pretty simple. Just celebrating life and, you know, just trying to be the best version of you as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, you don't have to follow the 12 steps or the 15 principles or whatever. I mean, I was raised in the Bill Gothard cult. We had the 7 sort of life principles. That's what we were told, you know, if you do these 7 things and the life, you know, character traits, that's what it was, the godly character qualities. If you just build these 7 into your life, then God will bless you. God, you'll be pleasing to God, blah, blah, blah. You know, so that's what I spent my life doing, kind of like you. I wanted to get it right. And, you know, that could really mess a person up, can it? Because then you find out none of it's true. I did all those 7 things. And where's the blessing? Where is all this stuff supposed to be happening? To be showered with blessings that I'm not seeing it. In fact, I'm seeing more hardships, more suffering, you know? But yet that was all explained away too, because of course suffering is part of the Christian experience, isn't it? God's teaching us a lesson, so we need to be thankful for the suffering that he sends our way and blah, blah, blah. I mean, very destructive.
And absolutely. And one thing that I realized too in deconstruction was how the Christian narrative helps out the capitalist propaganda to keep us small.
Yeah, fits right in there.
And then with all the other isms, right? How it works with racism and all of that. It's a very complex structure, social conditioning to keep us pitted against each other and to keep us from really truly thriving, that would aid a few individuals.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's the ones who are on top that are thriving. Look at Christian nationalism, Manifest Destiny, American history, isn't it? The white man's going to go out and conquer. Well, the Native Americans are in our way, but that's okay because they're like the Canaanites. You can interpret the whole thing as the story of Joshua conquering Canaan, and they needed to go because they're savages and heathens and all the rest of it. So, you know, what's the problem? As long as you're a white male, pretty much, you're on the good side. If you're Native American or if you're African American, not so much. You're not going to do so well in that system.
And without exposure, you know, people are just going to, they're never going to be able to grow without, you know, seeing from other perspectives and other people groups. And, you know, so that's something that is really important to me and Simply Being, is to have diversity too. Expose people to the wisdom and the value of people who aren't like you.
You need those other perspectives, don't you? Well, where can people find you if they want to go search you out on social media? Where can they find you? Where can they find the magazine? What's the best place to find you?
Yeah, I'm mostly on Facebook. I have a little bit on Instagram, but I'm mostly on Facebook, Run Story. And my links, I have, you can find all of my links on one link, which is pensite.com/Run Story.
Mm-hmm. Right. Is that the best place to find you? Are you on X at all? Or have you given up the whole Elon Musk
thing? Oh, no. No. That's not for me. I'm on Threads.
Yeah.
Not very much. It's mostly Facebook.
Okay, Rhett. So that's the best place to find you. Listen, thank you so much, Ren. Really enjoyed meeting you finally. I'm so glad we got a chance to talk. I was like, oh my God, what if this doesn't come off now? We're going to have to reschedule again. But thank you so much. I've really enjoyed talking to you. I'd love to have you come back. If you're interested, we do our Mindshift Zoom calls. If you're interested, it's like a group call. I think people would love to meet you, you know, so I can hit you up with some dates. Maybe we can hook you up in another couple of months. That'd be really good. So thank you so much, Ren.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you. So glad I got to finally be here.